Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. We first covered Chris Turner's case back on July 5th, 2017. Then we did a second episode about Chris on September 1st, 2017. I've combined those two episodes and edited them down a bit to give you a refresher about the details of Chris's case and what transpired after we covered Chris the first time. If you remember this story well, you can fast forward to around the 55-minute mark, where the update begins.
It's hard because we don't have a voice. We're just little people on the planet, you know, but to us, Chris isn't little. He was everything, and our lives aren't going to be the same.
Hello, and welcome to episode 83 of The Vanished. 23-year-old Chris Turner disappeared from his home in Las Vegas, Nevada on August 6, 2016. When he disappeared, he left behind his phone, car, and wallet. His family believes that to walk away would have been very out of character for Chris, since he was a devoted father to a young son. His girlfriend was the last person to see him, and her stories keep changing. Chris's case has received zero media attention. A couple missing persons organizations shared his flyer on social media, but that's it. You can't expect the public to come forward with tips if they aren't even aware that someone's missing. This is Chris's story.
Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500.
Chris was born and raised in Reno, Nevada, but just 3 months before he disappeared, he and his girlfriend relocated to Las Vegas. Chris's mom, Dawn, gave me a little bit of background on him.
Chris is very family-oriented. He's the oldest of five siblings, and he never really went a day without contacting at least my 17-year-old daughter, Ashley. And, I mean, nobody's heard from him. And he had a two-year-old son. He was a really good dad. He shared custody of his son.
As Dawn mentioned, Chris was the devoted father of a two-year-old son, and it's important to note that Chris's girlfriend is not the mother of his son. It's also important to point out that he had a good relationship with his son's mother. They were able to share custody without any issues.
The mother of his children, she had also moved on. She has developed a good relationship. So, I mean, it was really civil. Chris pretty much could have the baby anytime he wanted. And he was taking baby Ryan 3 months at a time because he was so young. So Chris would have the baby 3 months, and then Destiny would have the baby 3 months. And then they were going to conclude who would take the baby as soon as school age hit. But they were they just loved the baby to death. And, Destiny didn't have any worries about the baby with Chris.
On the other hand, Chris did have a rocky relationship with his current girlfriend, Nicole, or Nikki. In this episode, sometimes she's referred to as Nikki, and other times she's referred to as Nicole, but we're talking about the same person. The two had dated for about 2 years leading up to his disappearance. Chris's mom, Dawn, told me about the relationship between the two.
She was very controlling, and my son was a very relaxed person. He just never really let anything get to him. I can't even recall one time in my son's entire life where he got mad and raised his voice at me. He was just always, from the time he was born, he was very mellow, never like wanted problems, but she wouldn't even let him go to the store by himself. And then eventually they ended up having to work at the same places together, and she would get very jealous of girls because Chris was very handsome. that she would get very jealous when the younger girls at the warehouses would flirt. And so it was rocky on and off. And he just often would get frustrated. And when they would get into fights over her jealousy, he would leave and come to family and just say he had had it with her. So it wasn't an easy relationship at all.
Before Chris and his girlfriend decided to move to Las Vegas, they lived with Dawn in her home in Reno. During this time frame, Dawn began to have issues with some of Nicole's actions, but tried to keep things as civil as possible for the sake of her relationship with her son.
So the baby and Chris and Nicole all lived with me for 9 months before they moved to Vegas. And the last words with me and my son were an argument because Nicole was stealing stuff from Walmart and bringing it into my home. And I have, you know, my youngest children are 5 and 6 and 10. I told Chris that I can't have her in my home. You're always welcome and I love you. And Nicole became very irate and she came to my place of residence yelling and screaming in front of neighbors. And I just told her to never come back on the property. And I knew once I had that argument with Nicole that things with me and my son were going to be a little bit iffy. But I know my son, he adored me to death and I knew that it was going to pass. But Nicole did everything she could to pretty much keep Chris away from family. And she got very jealous of me and Chris's relationship because we were very, very close.
I asked Dawn if she knew what had prompted Chris and Nicole to move to Vegas.
I think that they were thinking that there was more money in Vegas. And my son went to job court here in Reno. And his best friend, John, lived in Vegas. So they did have friends in Vegas. And, you know, being 20, they did go out. They did have a good time in Vegas. So, yeah, I think it was just the idea of Vegas. And it scared me. Chris and Destiny actually lived in Vegas when the baby was born. And he ended up moving back when they separated. And I just always told him it's a really big town and it will eat you alive. I think that it was just the idea that there was more money in Vegas and they could party and like make money and be young.
One of the problems with Chris's disappearance is that the story itself is coming from one person, his girlfriend, Nicole. His close relationship with his son has helped to establish a time that we know Chris was alive and well that is coming from someone other than her.
My son Skyped my grandson. He Skyped baby Ryan every day. And the last Skype with baby Ryan was on August 6th that morning.
So we know that Chris was alive and well on the morning of August 6th, 2016, when he Skyped with his son. Sometime after that, he disappeared and his girlfriend reported him missing the next day on the 7th. When he disappeared, he left behind all of his belongings, including his car, his wallet, and his phone. His girlfriend, Nicole, has told many different stories about his disappearance and the circumstances leading up to it.
We all knew right away that something was wrong. I mean, the family's always known he's probably not coming home because the girlfriend reported him missing the next day in Vegas, but she didn't call family until August 17th. And it was really out of character for her because anytime they had a fight, she was ringing up our phone. He just never went without contacting family. So he moved to Vegas and then 3 months later went missing. And the girlfriend's story has changed over and over. She has said that he left to go get a job at 6 a.m. at the Carpenters Union. But at the same time, she said that she had his birth certificate and wallet and social and all that stuff. And then she told other people that he was depressed and walked out with a Bible and said that he was leaving to be the best man he could be for her, and then he never came home. So it's been quite an adventure trying to put all of the stories together.
Nicole was telling so many stories that Chris's family members began to record them in order to keep them straight themselves.
I had to download an app to record her because it was so just outrageous, all the stories, and I thought, there's no way that detectives are going to believe me. And I knew that the recordings eventually won't be useful in court, but they're still useful.
Nicole was under the impression that Dawn and some of her family members weren't speaking, so she told them different stories about Chris's disappearance, thinking that they wouldn't compare them and add up the differences.
Nikki didn't know that she was on speakerphone when my cousin was at my house. So we're listening to the lies she told me versus the, and I would record the lies she told, and we would be writing this down in our journals going, this woman is absolutely nuts off her rocker. Because she didn't think any of us were talking, and why she wouldn't think that I wouldn't go down and file a report on my own son. She straight up told me, Nikki told me, I said, I'm going to go down and file a report in the morning. And she goes, you don't need to do that. I filed one here. And I said, well, I'm filing one here. She did not want me to go down and file that report. And so I think she thought because he was an adult, I would just, there was nothing I could do about it. And I said, well, I'm not stopping. And one night I talked to her. And she was in an apartment, and I heard a man, and I said, this is like not even a month after my son went missing. I go, do you have a man in your apartment right now? And she goes, it's my friend. He came up from Reno. And I was like, are you serious right now? And I really got kind of upset, and we got into a fight and on the phone. And I said, I'm going to find my son wherever he's at, Nikki. And she goes, you will not find your son. And I just, she's done so many things that just make me sick over this. She hasn't acted like somebody that was devastated or looking, and you would hope that your child would be with somebody that would go to the ends of the earth to find somebody, you know, find your child. She hasn't. So, and the only fingers pointing are to her. As much as I want to believe somebody did, you know, snatch him up and that she didn't have anything to do with him, my son was he was like 6'3", and he was big, you know, there's nobody that was going to snatch my son up without a problem.
One of the stories that Nicole has told was that Chris was jumped by 5 black guys at their apartment complex. Very recently, some neighbors came forward and described an altercation that Chris had been in at the apartment complex, but the story was very different from Nicole's.
Neighbors recently did come forward on Facebook to me and said that her and Chris had had an argument the night before about her cheating, and that he was very upset looking for her around the complex. The night before he went missing, he got into a fight with somebody. He had gotten into an altercation with a man in the complex. So basically, we just haven't seen him, heard from him. All of his items, cell phone, the car, his wallet, everything was left behind. So we don't know if somebody went into the apartment and snatched him up or something happened between him and the girlfriend. But she refuses to talk to a detective. And so it's kind of our hands are tied at this point.
The neighbors who came forward with this information shared it with Dawn and also the Vegas Police Department. This has helped them establish that the scuffle took place because Chris was going around banging on doors that night.
Nikki had said he was jumped. This is what she told my cousin. He was jumped by 5 black guys that night. Well, when the investigator went and talked to neighbors, he eventually talked to the gentleman that my son got into a fight with, and it was because my son was banging on doors looking for Nicole. They ended up getting into a scuffle. So the next day, I guess friends stated, no, he didn't have bruises on him or anything. It was just a brief scuffle because he was upset in finding out that Nicole was running around with somebody else in Vegas. So eventually, the conclusion is that he did get into a brief fight with one person. But again, we were going, well, why would she say that he was dumped? The neighbors that came forward did talk to Detective Hernandez at the Vegas PD, so they were legit.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
After Chris went missing, his girlfriend didn't let the mother of Chris's son know that he was missing. In fact, she took him for a scheduled visit like nothing was wrong.
She took the two-year-old on a visit. My grandson, Ryan, she took him on a visit without telling the mother that Chris was missing. And she was leaving the baby with neighbors. And we just found this so odd. And then eventually she called Destiny, the mother of my grandson, and said, "Oh, Chris is missing. You have to come and get the baby." So there's just been a lot of odd behavior going on. And Nikki has never once called us on holidays or anything to say, "Have you seen Chris?" It's like she's just always known what's happened to him. She's never once called a family member and said, "Has he shown up? Has he called you?" It's just been the most odd behavior in the world.
Nicole has refused to speak to police and a private investigator, even going as far as giving out fake addresses. This has only made his family more suspicious of her.
When you love somebody and you're trying to find them, you are constantly in contact with people. She moved away from Vegas back to Reno here with her family. She told the investigator that we had investigating, he wanted to do an interview with her. And at the same time, detectives were trying to interview. When he went missing, she reported him in Vegas missing on August 7th. But she didn't call us till the 17th. So I went down the next morning and I filed a police missing persons report in Sparks, Nevada. And when I texted her, she gave me the address because I said, "Hey, this detective wants to talk to you." And so she gave the address and the detective called me, or the cop called me and said, "This is a vacant address." So I texted her back and I said, "They're looking for you. Why are you giving fake addresses?" She ended up giving two fake addresses. And police couldn't do anything at that time because the real address was out of jurisdiction. They couldn't go into another jurisdiction. They had to give it to another jurisdiction. So by the time that happened, she had moved back to Reno with her family. And ever since, she won't talk to police or detectives or anybody. She told the investigator that she was coming to Reno for her father's birthday or something, and that she would do an interview and talk to him when she got back. Well, it ends up, after we talked to neighbors, she had helped the upstairs neighbors move, and she had moved. And her plan was never to be back in Vegas. She moved back here. So she's just been constantly skipping interviews. It just is odd behavior for somebody that loves somebody so much and wanted to look for them.
At one point, she even exchanged text messages with an investigator pretending to be Chris.
Sergeant Burns, he had a private investigator call me. He was investigating possibly the sex industry, and he called me and said, "I found your son." And I literally was on the ground crying. Like I was, and I said, "From what number?" And he said, and I go, "That's the phone that him and his girlfriend shared. That Nikki has that phone." Well, he had texted, and she, I guess, had texted him back acting like she was Chris and that he was alive.
This is one of those cases where the further you dig, the more bizarre it gets. One of Nicole's sisters recently called Chris's family to ask if he was dead, which seems like such a strange and inappropriate thing to do.
It was weird because a few weeks ago, one of Nicole's sisters called my 17-year-old and asked, "Is Chris dead?" And my daughter was like, "What?" And at the same time, Sparks Police did come to my residence to investigate the phone call because it was odd, because Nicole had told her family that she had seen Chris at the mall in October. So the stories are just off the hook with this woman. Sparks Police came, and I don't know if they were trying to investigate her here. I know that they've asked to take DNA samples for me and his dad, and I don't know where they're at with the case. I used to call like 3 times a week. Now I just call the detectives like maybe once a week, every 2 weeks, because I know that their hands are tied right now as far as Nicole goes, because if she doesn't come forward and talk to them, we don't really know what happened that night.
One question that I asked Dawn was, if she thinks Nicole's involved in her son's disappearance, does she also believe that she would have needed help?
I mean, at this point, I believe so. At first, I actually was kind of on her side. You know, I just right away was like, why wouldn't she call us for 2 weeks? How much time has passed? I knew right away that, I mean, even to this day, I'm thinking we're going to find a body. You know, eventually they find a body or remains or something. But I thought 2 weeks, I mean, that's pivotal time for you to find someone that you love. If one of my children went missing, I would be down at the police department that day, or I would be calling my family frantic. When she moved back to Reno, she still hadn't even told her parents he was missing. She acted like nothing happened. It's just so odd to me. And it just says guilt, guilt, guilt. Because at first I was like, well, maybe she's in shock. She thought we would be mad at her. But then I thought, no, she would think that he was here. She would have been ringing up our phone the next day that he didn't come home. She would have been calling every family member. Even though we didn't get along, she would know that Chris would come here and she would be looking for him here. Anytime they had a fight, she was at our door. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? You know, I had to hear the story of the Carpenters Union, and I said, no. I go, you're not going to go to the Carpenters Union at 6 a.m. with no ID or no cell phone with your contact information. And then we ended up calling the Carpenters Union, which was 2 blocks from their house, supposedly. And we called them, and they said, no, we moved years ago. We're miles away from that address, and he never came down here to apply. And I was like, oh, so frustrated. Then came up the story, well, he was depressed and left with the Bible. It's been a wild ride, and I've had much anger issues, drinking really heavy. In November, I ended up seeking outside help therapy and stuff over it, and I don't drink anymore, and because I want to have a solid mind for my son and just be there for him 100% when we do get answers or whatever happens. But my determination is just to be my son's voice and have a day in court. I do believe that someone hurt him, and I do believe that something did happen, and we don't know. I mean, I think it's just odd that he would leave the apartment unless he was lured out saying, hey, let's go for a ride to the store. Why would he leave his wallet even if he was just leaving for a minute? It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
I also wondered if Chris and Nicole's apartment in Vegas was ever forensically searched.
As far as I know, they have not, and that really frustrates me. I believe detectives don't tell me everything. I mean, I believe that, and I believe it for a reason, because I'm highly emotional, and it's been really hard. I'm living in the same town as her, and I know exactly where her parents live. And I do. Detective Bardot had asked me to get her parents' address here. So I had to go to the residence, drive by it, and get the address. And it's very hard to restrain. So they haven't searched, as far as I know. What I do is I leave my son's missing person flyers all over her parents' neighborhood when I have a chance. And I don't let his face go away.
One of the biggest issues with Chris's case is that in less than a year's time, it's been passed around from detective to detective over and over again.
The problem with my son's case is it's gone from, he's been missing for not even a year, and it's been in the hands of 5 detectives, and their caseload was 200. Now we have Detective Hernandez, and his caseload is 50, and I think he's pretty much on it. But his hands are tied because they can't just, you know, drag people in for questioning. They have to have evidence.
As I'm sure you can imagine, many people are reported missing in Las Vegas each year. In fact, between 60 and 80 people are reported missing in Vegas each weekend. It's notorious for being a place where people go to party. Most people do turn up, so when a young guy like Chris goes missing, it's easy for law enforcement to assume that he'll turn up after a few days.
In the beginning, they were like, your son is 23, and there's, you know, he's probably just out partying. I mean, we knew that wasn't the case, but that's how detectives took it. And so now, you know, they're obviously, it's been, when it hit about the nine month mark, like right, I would say about after 6 or 7 months, they started taking it a little more serious. I was flying up there. I was very serious because every time I would call, they would say, what's your son's case number? And I would say, he's not a case, he's a name. So I eventually got really pissed off and I flew up there to talk to Sergeant Burns and Detective Bardot at the time that was on the case. And I think they started taking it serious, like, you know, because my son wasn't a big partier. He was very athletic. He could run 14 miles in the blink of an eye. He ran 5Ks all the time. I mean, he just wasn't the type of kid that would just go off the map. And so I tried really hard to prove that to them and that I was serious. I mean, now where we're at is kind of a waiting game. And now that it's back in Hernandez's hands, it's kind of like he's got to go all the way through the caseload and all the stories and everything with Nicole and how he went missing. So it's kind of like starting a book over with him. It's frustrating being Chris's mom trying to be his voice.
Often we hear from family reasons why someone wouldn't just leave. In Chris's case, Dawn already mentioned his son, but Chris also was very, very close with his grandmother. She was already very ill when he went missing and sadly has since passed away without having any answers.
I had Chris when I was 16 and my mom helped me raise him and they were very close. And my mom literally died like a month ago and she died of a broken heart. She didn't want to leave. She was suffering and she didn't want to leave without knowing what happened. And I kept telling her, I won't stop looking until I find him, Mom. But she did not want to go until we found answers. And she ended up passing not knowing, and they were so close that there is no way that my son would have disappeared with as sick as my mom was. We've known that she's been dying for a while, and there's no way that he would leave her like that. He just didn't have it in his heart. He, you know, he's always been an animal lover and just very kind-spirited, and he couldn't stand to see me cry, and Chris had too many reasons to stay around. I'm hoping maybe this podcast will help. Maybe I can get more media attention. I write all the shows all the time. It's so hard to get media attention and get people to listen. I just think you're some crackpot.
Dawn explained to me why not having closure in a missing person's case makes it so hard.
You can't go, like on his birthday, what we did for his 24th birthday, me and the kids, all my kids went to the park with balloons and we wrote prayers on the balloons and we lifted them up. Because there's no headstone. There's nothing to say goodbye to. You don't know. And so that's another reason we just really want answers. I know that Nikki is living in her own hell right now. And that's between her and whatever she believes in. She has to live with whatever she's hiding from. But for my family to just have a place where we can all go once a year and say we love you and say our goodbyes. My youngest kids, they lost their dad. Chris went missing in August, and then we lost my ex in October, and then my mom just died. So it's just been one thing after another for our family. But the thing with my mom and the thing with their dad is we have closure to those things. We can go and say goodbye. You're not suffering. Thank God. With my son, it's an ongoing heartache. There's always one family member having, we call it a Chris day. It's like, who's having a Chris day today? And we're always available for that family member. And we just sit and listen. Sometimes it's a call at 1 a.m. Someone can't sleep because they're so agonized in pain over it. I've had to learn to be a very strong woman for my son through this, because if I was weak, I would just be in a bottle right now, hiding out from the world, not wanting to think about it. But pretty much I'm the only one that's been strong enough to go to Vegas to get the flyers made, to talk to people, to get the neighbors' attention. And this is definitely, I think, the worst pain a parent can go through, or just any family member, is just not knowing. That's all we want is closure at this point. We're not even out for vengeance for her. We know that she's going to live in her own hell. When you know something like that and you're guilty of, even if it's just knowledge of knowing what happened, you have to live with yourself, and your life's not going to be very happy living those secrets.
So what happened to Chris Turner on August 6, 2016? It's hard to tell when so little is known about his case. What do we even know? We know he spoke to his son via Skype that morning, and later that evening he was reportedly involved in a scuffle with a neighbor. After that, he was gone. Other than that little bit of information, everything else is a story that comes from his girlfriend, and those stories have changed over and over. We do know that he left behind his belongings, including his phone, wallet, and car. Why did it take his girlfriend so long to notify his family that he was missing? Why hasn't she put any effort into looking for a man that she dated for 2 years? At the time of Chris's disappearance, he was 6'2" tall and weighed about 180 pounds. If you have any information about Chris's disappearance, please call the Las Vegas Police Department at 708-828-2907.
So, I mean, pretty much that's the story. I mean, Chris, anybody, even the neighbors that came forward, their only words about my son were good, that he was a good-hearted, kind person, and that he was helpful to all the neighbors. And I mean, if anything came out of it, even if I don't get answers, it's just good to know that people know what my son's about, and that they know that he wasn't just, you know, a 23-year-old wanting to party. And he loved life. He loved everything about life. He had good friends, good family. And, you know, my mom spoiled him, but he never acted like, you know, a brat. Like I said, he had good reason in the past to be very angry at me, and he never, ever raised his voice at me or called me a name. I can't even find one person that he ever raised his voice to, you know, because we've been talking a lot. We talk a lot. And my 17-year-old, she calls me crying all the time, you know, because she's so used to, even now, she's so used to just looking at her phone and having a sweet text from him. He was very protective of her, and it's just not having him here has really been kind of a missing link to our lives, because he just brought so much light. She lied, and it caused my son's case to be closed. So many people, after part one of Vanished hit, so many people came forward. People are angry. How can you close a case? How do you close it when we have all this evidence? I don't think she realized that Chris has kind of a crazy mom, and I'm not stopping. Everything that she says, does, I'm going to contradict with the truth.
393 days. That's how many days 23-year-old Chris Turner has been missing from Las Vegas, Nevada. You heard his story in episode 83, and now you'll hear what's come to light since that aired back in July. In part one, you heard from Chris's mom, Dawn. She told us how Chris's girlfriend had been telling many different stories about the last time she saw him. Well, her stories have continued to change, and just days after the podcast aired, the police department closed Chris's case. Dawn has been left still searching for her son with no assistance from law enforcement. I'm Marissa, and this is episode 89 of The Vanished, part 2 of Chris Turner's story. After the first episode about Chris aired, tons of people who knew Chris and his girlfriend Nikki began reaching out to Dawn with information. In part 1, we said that the last time Chris was known to be alive was on the morning of the 6th when he Skyped with his son. Well, Destiny, who's the mother of his son, came forward and let Dawn know that he did not Skype with his son that morning.
Destiny told me, this is weird. In the beginning, Destiny told my cousin Savannah, like, he Skyped baby Ryan on the 6th. And then a year later, when we get into contact with her, she says, no, he didn't. That didn't happen. Took my breath away. But Nicole never said he didn't Skype baby Ryan on the 6th. So it made me feel like she had a need to place him alive on the 6th when she told everybody that he went to the Carpenters Union. But my cousin called me one day and she's like, Dawn, have you looked at your calendar? And I go, no. She goes, August 6th of last year was a Saturday. They're not open. So whatever happened to my son, like, I'm now placing him alive on the 5th.
So now we have no proof that Chris was alive and well on the 6th, and we can now say that he was last seen on the 5th. We know that he was, in fact, seen on the 5th. If you remember, he had been going around the apartment complex knocking on doors looking for Nikki and got into a scuffle with another neighbor. Dawn has also learned that Chris had come out to his best friend John just 2 days before he went missing.
We're going to say the 3rd. Chris went to John and I guess came out as whether he was gay or bisexual, whatever. He talked to John about it. The 5th is when he went banging on doors looking for Nicole. That night, I believe he went missing.
I think this information about Chris coming out could be crucial to his case. It could possibly be the motive behind his disappearance. We know that his girlfriend was controlling. What if he had come out to her or tried to leave?
Nicole did not take rejection. She tried so hard. You didn't cross Nicole. And I think that if my son maybe was like, maybe exploring like something else that would make him happy that didn't include her, I could see her flipping her lid.
Dawn told me about another tip that she's gotten from people who have come forward after hearing Chris's episode.
People have come forward saying the front end of her car is damaged. I've had people search that apartment complex. The problem with social media is that Nicole gets word of when something's happening. She has a mole on the Find Chris page. So I brought up the car and all of a sudden the car is gone. There's no car. It's gone now.
A listener started talking to Nikki on social media, and she made a very disturbing statement to her.
And she got Nikki talking, and Nikki told her, like, straight up, her words were, Chris's family doesn't deserve to know what happened to him because they didn't care in the beginning anyway. My heart broke. I was like, we've always been there.
Some of Nikki's friends have also come forward and let Dawn know that Nikki told them that Chris had committed suicide months after his disappearance.
Because see, Nicole now has said that in January, Chris committed suicide and I was planning a funeral for him. She was telling people, I'm not sure if I want to go because like the relationship with me and Dawn is really hostile.
Probably the most shocking thing that's happened is that the Las Vegas Metro Police closed Chris's missing persons case just days after the podcast aired. Why did they do this? Nikki's mom told them that she had seen Chris alive, but the police department has not made contact with Chris to confirm that he is, in fact, alive and well.
Well, they closed Chris's case based on the fact that Nicole's mom said that she saw Chris alive. He came to their residence and caused problems. So they closed the case. And I was like, what? Nicole's sister Facebooked my 17-year-old and said, is Chris dead? So I automatically called Vegas Metro and said, why is this woman calling asking my daughter? They don't contact me. They always go through my daughter, who is very timid. She's a really good victim to get information in and out of. And I've had to since like warn her, like, if somebody contacts you, like, you need to contact me so I can contact police. So I contacted Vegas Metro and I said, Nicole's sister contacted Ashley asking, is Chris dead? So Sparks Police came to my house and they talked to me about it. And I let them in on the case. And I said, why is her sister asking if Chris is dead? They went to Nicole's parents' house. I believe that Nicole's mom is covering for her. Because she said, Chris came to our address causing problems. We've seen him alive. So I contacted detectives. I told them about your podcast. Because I keep switching detectives, I was like, I'm not going to go through a 5-hour dialogue anymore. It's exhausting. So I told Detective Hernandez, I go, will you please listen to the podcast? Then I called a few days later. It was switched to Detective Denny. And I'm like, for real? So then I told him, will you please listen to the podcast? I was at work when I got news that his case closed. And I literally broke down. Like, I lost it. I couldn't believe it's not a cold case. I believe that I made them mad. My motive is to find my son, his bones, his body. I want to find out what happened. But they've handled his case shitty. Like, they didn't search the apartment. They didn't search her car. I feel like our part one didn't make Vegas Metro look too good. That wasn't my intention. I was just being honest. I was being honest with my frustration of you didn't do your job. And if it was your child, you would have done it. So Hernandez came down on me very hard when I called him. Like, he was actually kind of an asshole. Like, made me cry at the end of the phone conversation because it's like, I just lost my son. He's like, do you understand? Like, I was just stepping in helping another detective. He's like, you didn't need to, like, bring me up. And what did I do wrong? I'm a mom. I'm being honest. Like, I'm not reaching out trying to make Vegas Metro look bad, but it's the truth. Like, you guys let my son down. And you're going based on, like, hearsay. And you close the case 3 days, like your podcast part one hit. And 3 days later, my son's case was closed. And then they gave me to Denny. And I was like, I literally broke down and cried. I'm like, please don't close this case. Please don't close my son's case. I was an emotional wreck. All this hard work that me and my family have done, like, you can't close his case. You're not going to leave it cold. You're going to close his case. And I was like, did you listen to the podcast? And he's like, yes, we did. How can you not bring this woman in for questioning? If it was a woman that went missing, she would have been interrogated in September.
I contacted the police department to confirm that his case was closed and also to ask them why. This is the answer that I got.
Okay, yeah, so that was a missing persons case. Yeah, I do show it as closed unless any other information becomes available. We always have to remember if there was no circumstances that were, and I'm sure mom will tell you whatever the case is, but we, as a missing adult, we don't have, if we were unable to have any leads or anything like that, we just close the case. And they don't get entered into the national system because if he was not listed as endangered, people can go missing on their own accord.
Kathy, who's a listener of this show, emailed them as well, and this is the answer that she got. The Las Vegas Metro Police Department has received your inquiry about the Chris Turner case. Our case for Mr. Turner is closed. He was sighted/located, so one could say he is alive. We cannot release information to someone not involved in a report, and beyond that, adults can lead their own lives, even though there are people who are concerned about them, but they tend to be out of touch with people who would like to hear from them. Thank you for your concern about Mr. Turner. If you have any further questions or concerns, please call the Las Vegas Metro Police Department Missing Persons Detail at 702-828-2907. Don't you find it odd that they wrote, so one could say he's alive? It's also odd to me that they're telling us inconsistent stories about why his case is closed. This has been completely devastating for Dawn.
It's really hard to not have police support. I used to turn to them and be like, help me, you know, help me find my son. And now I feel like, I don't know if it was ego or whatever. When they closed the case, it was like, do I give up? Do I give up now or do I keep going? And like, my only alternative is to keep going because it doesn't go away. You don't have any other option. Like, I wake up and I have a picture on my wall of Chris taking his first step and he's reaching for me. And I look at that picture every day and I feel like my son is still reaching for me. And I have to get up every day, even when I feel like losing my mind. I don't even call Vegas PD anymore because when I do, It's usually ridiculous what they tell me, the reasons why they close this case based on hearsay. Did you actually talk to my son or see him? No. So when I call, it affects my sanity to a different degree. I had to quit calling them.
When someone goes missing, it can be a struggle for families to decide what information to put out there for the public to hear. Some things can be deeply personal. Dawn knew that Chris was questioning his sexuality, but she didn't want to put it out there before because she felt like that was his secret to expose. But after they passed the 1-year anniversary of his disappearance, she felt like she can't keep protecting others' secrets anymore. One of those secrets could be the key to solving this case. Some of these secrets expose Nikki's true colors.
At first, I was like, what do I expose? What do I don't? And I've been protecting Destiny, but like my feelings now are, I can't keep protecting people. Like, I just have to be real. Going through this case in the last year, I've learned that Nikki has control. She has to have control of everybody in her life, whether it's a roommate, my son, Destiny. I really wanted to protect Destiny because I wanted to save my relationship with my grandson. But Nicole was blackmailing Destiny over some pictures that were taken when she was 9 months pregnant. That's why Chris and Destiny broke up. My son found these messages and lost his mind. It was the only time in my son's life when I knew he was truly heartbroken. He didn't degrade her. He was like, Mom, this hurts so much. And he was depressed and sad. Nicole arrived a week later. Like, she drove from Reno to Vegas. So I think my son had a loyalty to Nicole. Like, she picked up the mess for him, you know? Nicole thought that it was going to be her, Chris, and the baby. She told me she was telling Destiny that she was going to blackmail her on child pornography charges because she took pictures naked. And I'm like, I'm really dealing with some people that are in their 20s. Like, you guys are crazy. I was like, that's not child pornography. But I could see where Destiny would get scared. She had just met her new husband and wanted to move on and be happy. I love Destiny and I promised to protect her. But at this point, my son was murdered for a reason. I believe, like, he's dead. I'm not bringing him home. So I didn't want to expose my son being gay. Those are things that your child comes to you and you're like, I'll never tell a soul. Like, I love you. Like, I'll never tell anybody. But after the 1-year mark, you know, in Destiny's defense, I talked to her a lot back then. And she was like, he works. I'm like, I'm lonely. I can recollect all that. And the way it was handled was not good. Destiny doesn't look good. She was a good person. And she was really good for my son. And they loved each other. But they were in their 20s. And it was kind of inevitable that this isn't working. I remember Nicole telling me, I'm going to get her on child pornography charges. And I was like, who do you think you are? Who made you God? You know, like I think she knew that Chris still loved Destiny. And I think that if Nicole wouldn't have intervened, that Chris and Destiny would have been back together. They really loved each other.
Dawn explained why revealing all this has been such a struggle for her.
I knew my son was gay. But like, I'm not going to, that was for my son to tell the world, not for me. And when your child tells you, Mom, keep the secret, I'm going to keep it. But we're getting to a point where we know Chris isn't coming home. He could have been killed because I feel like he wasn't clear about his sexuality. But I think he was getting ready to leave Nikki.
Some people may walk away from their friends and family if they aren't accepting of their sexuality. But that wasn't the case with Chris's family.
Yeah, my family is very unconditional, very accepting. And so I grew up in Reno. I did unconventional stuff, like growing up here, like it was a party city. And my family never judged us. Chris knew I knew long before, but we never really, it wasn't something that had to be talked about because if you're a hateful person and you're mean and you're a bully, we might have a opinion of you. But being gay was not something that Chris ever would have been judged on. So I think moving to Vegas was Nikki's idea. I think isolating him was Nikki's idea. It didn't go in her favor because I think Chris was like, you know what? I'm going to find myself. I just think that he was finding himself. And my son could have called. He would have had a bus ticket, a plane ticket. Like, he could have just called family and we would have been there in 7 hours or had him on a plane that night. My family is very supportive. You know, I was raised being a free spirit, and I think that my son embraced that. And it didn't matter, like, if you're with a man or a woman, as long as you're happy, like, we don't care, as long as they treat you good.
You already know that Nikki has come up with many different stories regarding Chris's disappearance. Dawn has been working to track down people that can help her disprove these stories.
She said that she saw him in a Walmart in Reno with another woman. She said, before Nikki, my son was dating another woman from the gym named Maria. She's absolutely, like, striking. She was beautiful. And he sent me pictures. Look who I met today. Nicole stated he left to press with the Bible. He went to the Carpenters Union at 6 a.m. He committed suicide in January, and I was planning the funeral. He took off with Maria. So everybody on Facebook, I was like, we need to find Maria. And we found her, and she's newly married with a baby. She hasn't seen Chris. Every story that Nicole tells, I try and contradict with the truth. I believe that Nicole thought, as long as she places my son alive or dead, either way, she's going to calm the tension. It's going to take the attention off of her. I don't think she realized that Chris has kind of a crazy mom. I'm not going to stop. When your podcast, part one, hit, we sent that to her family. My daughter Ashley sent it to her sister. And the reason that we sent it was to expose. If she's lying to us and her friends, she definitely has been telling her parents a lie too. So I wanted her parents to know exactly what was going on. So now she states, I distance myself from my family. And they're very a good family. And I think they're learning that she lied. And I think that she's becoming an outcast in her family because with every single lie that she said, I've contradicted. I send it to her family and all I want is answers. But my question is, why would her mom cover for her? I love my kids. To the bottom of my heart, my kids are my whole entire world. But if my son was being accused of murder or being a suspect and I thought he was guilty, I would not cover for him. I wouldn't condone that behavior. And her mom states that she saw my son alive. So you're saying that my son was alive in Reno, Nevada at your house, but he hasn't contacted me or cousin Savannah or Christian or Ashley. He's in Reno, but he just didn't contact us.
Going back to the police closing Chris's case based on the word of Nikki's mom, Dawn has been wondering why she would do this.
I met her mom and I met the dad. The dad is extremely controlling. Him and Chris butted heads. That's why they moved in with me. They couldn't stay there anymore. So the mom loves her kids and she loved baby Ryan. Like, she was a good grandma and she took very good care of the baby. But I feel like when I envision it, the police officers rolled up on their house. And I believe at the time Nikki was living with her parents and they knock on your door at 8 o'clock at night and they're questioning you about your daughter's integrity. I feel like she automatically had a response of the protective mom. Like, I'm going to protect my kids. She didn't know if those police officers were going to handcuff her daughter at that point. So she automatically, I think as a mom, which I don't judge her for it, I think maybe I would have that protectiveness too, but she lied and it caused my son's case to be closed.
A lot of the things that Nikki's done just look bad. Dawn has tried to look at this situation from Nikki's point of view.
I put myself in her shoes all the time because I want to make sure, like, I'm not being too over crazy. So I put myself in her shoes. I had a fight with my kid's dad. He left. He was mad and he left. He's mad at me. We had a fight. I'm not going to go file a report the next day. She did. And then it was like not contacting family for almost 2 weeks. And then her throwing my son's stuff away.
Even though Chris's case has been closed, the hope is that we can get it reopened and some forensic testing can be done.
They've interviewed Nicole Wentz. Never searched the apartment. I want the apartment searched. I want it luminol. I want, like, blood. I want the car searched. Why? Like, if it was their child, they would do it. It would have been done. Why was she so swift to move?
After I interviewed Dawn for this part two, she posted about it on Facebook. That evening, Nikki started calling around frantically asking if they'd found Chris's dead body.
So I guess Nicole is now calling frantic. You know, I make my Facebook page public. Any interviews, anything that's happening, I make it public. I want Nicole to see it. And Nicole is calling Sierra frantic, asking if we found the dead body. I guess Nicole is now freaking out. Again, everybody's like, what are you talking about? And what are you talking about, a dead body, Nicole? I feel like Nicole feels backed into a corner. There's nowhere to go. Like, her lies are exposed. I just knew in my heart he was gone. I just knew. Yeah, he was dead when they said he was cited and they closed his case. He was already dead. It's not your typical case. It's just not like you're finding your missing loved one and you can move on now. It's pain after pain after pain, and it makes zero sense to me.
In September of 2017, we knew that Chris's case had been closed. This was a very difficult time for his mother, Dawn. She felt like no one was listening, and law enforcement wasn't looking for her son. Dawn tried contacting various different law enforcement agencies at different levels to see if she could get the case reopened, but she didn't have any luck. Dawn tried some other avenues, such as contacting her elected officials and attorneys. Surely someone would see the injustice that had occurred, and this case would be reopened. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. What we didn't know back in 2017, and wouldn't know until 2020, was that even before either podcast episode aired, Chris had been found. He wasn't alive and just avoiding his family. His remains were sitting in a medical examiner's office, and he was later buried as a John Doe. In this update, we're going to explore how this all happened, because Chris's loved ones want to make sure that this never happens to another missing person's family ever again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 286 of The Vanished, an update on Chris Turner's story. Working on covering Chris Turner's disappearance over the years has been incredibly frustrating. I've battled with the Las Vegas Metro Police Department over records and why they were giving inconsistent statements about the reason why they closed Chris's case in 2017. Today, we still can't explain why they did what they did. They've never provided a reasonable explanation to me or Dawn. It's understandable that mistakes happen. Law enforcement officers are only human, and they aren't infallible. However, this has been a series of complete failures every step of the way. We learned over the years from other families and various agencies that Las Vegas Metro Police Department has a habit of closing cases that are still unsolved. In 2020, we covered Camille Dardanes Dotson, and her case had been closed months after she disappeared, with no reasonable explanation. 3 years after Chris Turner disappeared, and 2 years after his case was closed, a friend of Dawn's was able to get the case reopened by filing a new missing persons report for Chris. Dawn had been begging the police department to take DNA samples from her family for years. despite being told that Chris had been seen alive, and that one could say that he's alive, and that adults have the right to not contact family, Dawn had a feeling. She worried that her son was deceased and maybe a John Doe somewhere. Dawn had been fighting an uphill battle this whole time, and the internet sleuthing community was not always kind to her, saying things like she was crazy, and Chris probably just wanted nothing to do with her. These comments were extremely hurtful. But today, we know that Dawn was right. She wasn't crazy. Chris wasn't just leaving his family behind to start over. Chris was gone. This is what we know today. Chris Turner disappeared in early August of 2016. Chris's girlfriend, Nicole, reported him missing on August 7th. We were able to obtain records from the Clark County Coroner's Office. Remember, we covered Chris in July and September of 2017. Well, prior to that, in April of 2017, Las Vegas Metro Police Department had been called by some hikers. They were out hiking on Sunrise Mountain on April 8, 2017. That's when they stumbled upon skeletal remains. Search and rescue responded and began hiking out to the area, but they weren't able to find the remains before nightfall. 2 days later, they returned to the scene and located the remains. They called the Las Vegas Metro Police Department Homicide Unit and crime scene analysts, who declined interest. Search and Rescue was instructed to recover the remains themselves. Search and Rescue described that the remains were found in a steep, elevated Rocky Mountain terrain. The bones were scattered along an approximately 15-yard span, east to west, in a wash area. They had apparent long bones and partial skull pieces. The bones were described as slightly weathered and sun-washed. Today, we know that these remains were Chris Turner, but the medical examiner was tasked with putting the pieces back together to determine who this was and what had happened to him. There had been nothing in the area of the remains to indicate who this person was, but the approximate height and age matched up to Chris. From examining the bones that they were able to recover, they found that the midshaft of the right femur had an antemortem fracture, meaning it happened prior to death. The anterior surface of the distal right femur showed an apparent gunshot wound. The right third rib had an antemortem fracture, and the 12th rib had what appeared to be a healing fracture. The medical examiner wrote this, "This case is most likely a homicide. However, an accurate ruling as to the cause and manner of death requires police investigation, positive identification of the decedent, and additional forensic anthropological analysis. Without these components, the cause and manner of death remains open and undetermined." Chris's remains sat in the medical examiner's office and were later buried as a John Doe. A few months after the remains were recovered, we covered Chris's story in July. Days later, the police closed his case, stating that he had been seen alive. They never confirmed this to be true by finding Chris and speaking to him. Of course they couldn't. He was deceased. In 2019, Dawn's friend helped get the case reopened after filing a new report. This opened the door for Dawn and other family members to submit their DNA. Finally, a year later, Dawn got that call that she had been waiting for, but also dreading for the past 4 years. Here's Dawn.
I got Namus to take DNA. So Namus is the one that took DNA. And we didn't really hear anything back. And then August 2020, Clark County Coroner's Office called me and told me that Chris's remains had been found on a mountain in Vegas. So the next phone call I received from Clark County Coroner was that he had been in the mortuary since April 10th, 2017. When he first went missing, I was calling the Clark County Coroner's Office all the time. Like, I never stopped looking in the coroner's office because I figured that's where we would eventually find him. So I had made attempts, and I had asked them about John Doe's in the Clark County Coroner's, saying, you know, a man this height gave description. So I was constantly told, no, we don't have a John Doe that meets that description, and they did. So it's frustrating. They've known me throughout the years calling. So it was a shock when they did call. It kind of floored me because at this point, I didn't even think I wasn't even positive we would find him in Vegas. I thought maybe another state. It just didn't seem like he would be there that whole time while we were looking for him. I was walking through the door with groceries and I seen a 702 number and I answered it and they said, you know, this is Clark County Coroner's Office. And I just immediately, I couldn't believe it. I thought 4 years later, I knew right away what it was about. I just kind of was like stunned. And then of course I kind of put the call on hold. I had to, my kids were with me, so they kind of just knew. And then I went to go inform my daughter, Ashley, which was painful. And then after I gathered myself for a day or two, I did call them back for details. You know, I did ask them right away where and how. And it was the first phone call when they did tell me, you know, partial skull. He was found with no belongings, very significant injuries, broken bones. And that was the first call. And then after that, I kind of was starting to get pissed off because the second call is when I found out he had been there since April 10th, 2017. I just felt so much anger because how can you be looking, submitting DNA and he's there and you're calling the coroner's office and he's there. And it just seemed like our pain was prolonged. Why have we been going through sleepless nights for all these years if he was there? I had called them. I had gotten DNA taken. I did everything right. And then I thought about how they closed his case and he was already dead. And I got even more pissed. There's been times I've had to just back down from it because it's almost intolerable. The pain of it is intolerable.
You're probably assuming that since they finally identified Chris's remains, and that the medical examiner believed that this was a homicide, that there would be a renewed effort to work on Chris's case, to figure out what happened to him and bring justice to his loved ones. Unfortunately, this hasn't been the case.
So when the case reopened, I was hopeful. Then, you know, I thought, okay, good, we're going to get justice. They're going to find out some answers. If they wouldn't have closed the case, there's so many years where the case was closed that they could have been getting answers. There's people that probably moved from the apartment since then. And as of now, they're closing the case. When I inquire why, it's just basically they have told me that they will reopen the case if there is new forensic evidence or new evidence that opens up in the case. And they did interview Nicole. And they stated that she really, really did believe that she seen Chris alive at Walmart. My only issue with that is if you file a missing persons report and you know all these people are looking for somebody, why wouldn't you call law enforcement or the family if you cited them? So I just have a big problem with that. And so I continue on my beliefs of what happened. The police believe it's just miscommunication between me and Nicole. And I, again, I'm going to stand pretty strong that that's not the case. They have informed me they are closing the case. Pretty devastated by that because I always feel like there's more that can be done, more people that can be questioned. The mountain that Chris was found on was 8 miles from his apartment, and it's a pretty treacherous hike. And he was found with no belongings. They're stating that he was found in a ravine. And that might explain, like, his items might have been, like, washed away, but there still should be some items on the mountain if he took them. So he was found with nothing at all, just his bones. And they pretty much found all of him, but he only had a partial skull. And from what they told me, his injuries were pretty significant. April 10th, 2017, so approximately, I guess, 8 months after he went missing. He's now buried at a mortuary in Clark County with two other John Does. And he was not buried until April of 2020. So 3 or 4 months before they called me, he was buried. Now we're having to pay to exhume him. So basically what I feel like is the case is closed because lack of DNA or evidence. But I've asked detectives throughout the years, do forensics on the apartment, like do whatever, but they state they don't believe he died in the apartment, which I kind of believe that now. And I've requested photos of the spot in Vegas where he was found, because I don't want to automatically assume anything. I want to see for myself. You know, did he fall off a cliff? Why would he be 8 miles from his apartment on a treacherous mountain? We still haven't fully processed all of it, but it's just that gut feeling, just like when I knew he was dead. I just feel like it's still highly suspicious. The way it was handled is highly suspicious. The fact that I've had to fight Vegas Metro all these years is highly suspicious. Now it's just trying to gather the pieces together.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One question that remains unanswered is why Chris was on Sunrise Mountain and how he may have gotten there. Was Chris an avid hiker? Did he go out there by his own free will? Or was he taken or lured there by someone who wanted to take his life?
I mean, he ran. I don't recall him really hiking, like being an avid hiker. No. That's hard for me because he was athletic. If Chris did go hike a mountain, he's going to take somebody with him. He's going to call his friend John and say, you know, spontaneously, let's go hike a mountain today. I don't see him just going, oh, I'm going to leave my car, phone, keys, everything, and just go hiking without telling anybody.
When Dawn was notified that Chris had been identified last year, she was told some details about his injuries. She knew that they had partial remains with some broken bones, but they never told her about this gunshot wound. As we were preparing for this update, we asked Dawn to file the paperwork to get his autopsy report, since that had to be submitted by a family member. She was shocked when she got the paperwork in the mail.
Like, I started panicking in the beginning after he was found and they opened the homicide case. They asked me, has Chris ever been shot? Has he ever had broken bones? So I immediately thought, oh my God, he was shot. But then that dissipated when they said, well, it was worth looking into. It appears he fell off of a mountain. He could have fallen. And then I get the autopsy report and there's a gunshot wound. And I'm going, I don't understand. This is homicide. It clearly states homicide. My son didn't own guns. He didn't shoot himself in the leg. It kind of just, I mean, it validated my suspicions, what I've always thought. But I'm mad. I'm mad that my son did not fall off a cliff. Nobody can convince me that he fell off a cliff because he didn't shoot himself in the leg and then fall off the cliff. I've always been really vocal for my son. I've never strayed from my theories about what happened, who was involved. I've always stuck to my guns, and so far I've been right. And I think that maybe they take me wrong, and maybe they felt attacked or insulted. But I'm a mom who had a missing son who ended up dead in Clark County. And the whole time, they neglected this case. The whole time. My son was not important to them, but he was important to us. So the gunshot thing kind of clarified for me what I've always thought happened. And it would be nice if once, but they're not going to. I just don't have any faith in them anymore. I was quiet. I sat down and I shut up while they did their homicide investigation and said, oh, Nicole's response was appropriate. It appears he fell off a cliff. And then I get this autopsy. It's like, why should I shut up? If they're not going to be the voice for Chris, somebody has to. This can't keep happening to families. And I know I'm not the only family that feels this way. Chris isn't the only one. I think the people who shot him need to be held accountable. The people who know what happened need to be held accountable. So does Vegas Metro. Nobody's been held accountable.
Dawn and her family have gotten some answers since Chris has been identified, but they're still left in limbo. They believe Chris was murdered. He had broken bones and a gunshot wound. But nothing is being done today to look for who may have harmed Chris.
We have to move on. There's nothing left for us to do. There's nothing left. So now it's just learning how to not fight anymore, because I still, my mom instinct in me wants to still fight for him, because I still feel like there's unanswered questions. It's like you just interview the person once and you assume that they're telling the truth. And I still to this day don't think that she's being honest about what happened. And the fact that she cited him at Walmart and didn't, it just still gets me, because he was dead. He was dead then. And you know, they were together 2 years. She's going to know if it's Chris or not. And Chris was distinctive. He was 6'3". He was, you would know if you saw Chris or not. I mean, did he fall? Possibly. I've tried to really play scenarios through my head. I just believe somebody's covering something up, whether it was an accident, and I don't understand it. And then for Nicole to not call family for 2 weeks, what could we have done in that 2 weeks? Was he out in the elements suffering, or did he die right away? Or I don't know. I just don't believe Chris was on that mountain by himself. The circumstances around who Nicole was with right after that she moved, right after that she didn't answer, you know, our private investigators' questions. I mean, if you love someone, they go missing, you help. You don't evade everything. What happened on the mountain? I don't know. I don't believe that he went. It was August, so it's hot. He had no car, no cell phone, and he's not going to walk 8 miles in the Vegas desert heat in August and take a lovely hike. I mean, he was athletic, but he wasn't that stupid. Just from the apartment to the mountain was 8 miles. And then it was a treacherous hike. Like even the detective told me, I am a hiker. This is a hard hike. That's not going to happen in Vegas in the summer. There's a missing piece to the puzzle, and I just don't have it yet.
Dawn wants to have Chris's remains exhumed so that he can be put to rest near his family in another area of the state where they can visit his grave. Unfortunately, the process to have him exhumed was much more difficult than she ever anticipated and full of red tape.
At this point, it's just about getting him exhumed and putting him to rest. But how do we do that? It's pretty pricey. And I'm just feel like it's just been an endless battle with Metro and getting Chris exhumed, and Namus was going to fund it. Namus told me that the exhumation permit internment permit, like to get him exhumed, was approved. The funding was approved. And then literally the next day he called and said, we just got word that we don't have funding. So basically Chris is just sitting there. So it took three months to get the permits approved. And then now I'm being told from the mortuary that that permit was never approved, but his transportation permit is. And I'm like, well, what good is a transportation permit without a determent permit to get him exhumed? So the exhumation alone, I think they said, I have an itemized statement, would be like $3,000.
The past several years have been a heartbreaking roller coaster ride for Chris's family. Dawn told us that she's not going to stop seeking answers, but she's also taking time with her family to grieve.
And so I'm kind of just trying to let some time pass and let my family heal, let me heal and process it. We're doing grieving counseling and trying to just get help, because just having somebody missing and found is devastating. To have somebody missing that's been there the whole time you're looking for them, and the case is opening and closing and opening and closing. And there was an immense amount of just gratitude, you know, finding remains. I used to look down from the airplane and just go, oh my gosh, we're never going to find him. So I'm so thankful to the search and rescue people that did find him. I think that it did give us a sense of he's at peace now, so we deserve the same. To know, you know, in the beginning when he went missing, I pictured him being sex trafficked and drugged and raped. I mean, like the things that go through your head, it's horrible. To know that he's at peace brings me happiness. It just brings me, like, he's not suffering. And for my other children, because my youngest children still believed he was going to walk through the door any day, even 4 years later, they just did. It's given us an opportunity to go, okay, this is where we can really grieve. I think we've been grieving and we've been confused for 4 years, but now it's like the facts are the facts. He's gone. As far as justice, no. I'm so mad right now. Nobody has said, look, we really messed up. We're so sorry. We really screwed up, whether it's the detectives. Nobody's ever once said, you know, we really screwed up and hurt your family. You should not have gone through three more years of suffering. I don't think we'll ever miss him less. I think he's always a kind of a presence and a conversation. And that's one thing that I've made okay, too, is that my kids always know they can talk about, you know, Bubby. They can always talk about their brother. We can always laugh about it, cry about it, yell about it. It's just been kind of an open... I don't think that we're just in survival mode anymore. I think that we're starting to live. And because Chris would want that. He was happy, carefree. He did not want anybody to be unhappy. And so me and the kids, we have bad days and we have good days, but we are living. So it's not about feeling guilty about living anymore either. I felt guilty if I ate a steak, or, you know, I didn't know where my son was. What's he eating, or what's going on? Or, you know, like, you just constant guilt just for even breathing, thinking like, why didn't God take me? We're not hindered by like the what ifs anymore. But if he wasn't found, I don't know that we would be where we are. We needed that closure.
Dawn has always been very open about her struggles. She turned to alcohol to help her cope with the pain she felt after Chris disappeared. She explained how finding resources helped her cope in a healthier way.
For me, number one is just keep going no matter what. But I think one thing that I felt to do is knowing my limits. So turning to alcohol was like my thing. I felt like if I kept drinking, I could keep going. I could deal with it. I think 2 years solid. Not a day, I'm not saying like blitzed or anything, but I used it to chill me out. I regret it now because there's so many groups. There's so many grievance groups. For me, it was so amazing to go and find a group in my community. Me and the kids go together. And there's not very many like homicides or missing persons. But what I've learned is that you know, the parent sitting next to me whose child committed suicide was no less important than Chris, and their grief is no less than mine. Pain is pain. I don't know if it makes sense when I say, keep going, don't give up, but know your limits. Take timeouts, because I did not take a timeout for years. I just kept going, calling. I quit taking care of myself emotionally and spiritually. I met friends through the Vanish community and through other communities, and I get to be a part of the process with them now, helping or just calling, and we can scream and cry at each other or laugh about the, you know, insanity. Or for me, that was really key, was meeting people that had missing loved ones, because I don't think anybody can ever imagine. It's not, you're in a very black limbo.
Chris was the father to a young son, Ryan, whom he cherished. Dawn feels blessed to have Ryan in her life. He currently lives in another state with his mother and stepfather, but they're making plans for a visit very soon.
Chris left a son that he loved. His son was 2 years old. I'm not just fighting for Chris to get answers. Someday his son's going to ask me or ask his mom, what happened to my dad? And I want to be able to provide him with solid answers, not just, well, we think, we're pretty sure. No, I want to know what happened, and I want to know who did it. Because as far as I'm concerned, there's still a murderer out there. That's my view of it. Somebody got away with murder. I've talked to Destiny about going up there to see him this summer. He's identical to Chris. They look exactly alike. It's beautiful, but it's frightening, you know? So we've talked about, and he's young, so he, you know, it's not like, hey, let's talk about your deceased dad. Seeing Ryan, I think, will be very healing. I honestly have been scared to see Ryan. I feel like if I see him, I'm just going to like melt down. But then I'm like, geez, you know, like I got this gift. My son gave me the gift of this child, this little him, this little Chris.
It's been nearly 4 years since we first covered Chris Turner. Since then, we have learned so much. And we know that he had some injuries, including broken bones and a gunshot wound. But beyond that, what happened to Chris remains a mystery. Knowing that Chris is at peace has given his family a starting point for healing. But they are still without some answers they so desperately need. We can't say for certain that the gunshot wound to Chris's leg is what killed him. But something clearly violent occurred on Sunrise Mountain, or perhaps somewhere else, and Chris was left there. Dawn feels a need to know who is responsible for what happened to Chris. She needs justice for her son and family. She also wants things to change. She doesn't want another family to go through this prolonged trauma, because their case got mishandled like Chris's. This simply shouldn't have played out the way that it did. But through all of this, Dawn remains hopeful. Even recently, she has had new witnesses coming forward with information they feel might be important.
I'm so grateful we did get the closure of finding him. As a mom, you just, for some reason, that's so important. Even if you know they're gone, just bringing them home is so important. So, or knowing that they're at rest and you have valid proof that they're not suffering. I can continue to be feisty, or I can take some time to kind of just get some rest and reflect. I think we've all grown a little bit from it. I'm grateful to have my kids. We're still breathing. We lived through it. There was moments I did not want to live through it. And I talk about that all the time, because other families should know. It's okay to have those days where you don't want to live through it. It's a hard thing to live through. I've been thinking a lot about the day he was born. He was this chubby little, he just looked like a little Indian. He was just beautiful. He just was born beautiful, and he was beautiful till the day he passed. You know, but I also feel sad. I feel cheated. What would we all be doing now?
Thank you. That brings us to the end of episode 286. I'd like to thank Dawn for coming back on the show. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be revisiting a case that we covered in March of this year. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.